Media is DIY news. It is about people reporting their own news directly without the need for reporters, bypassing the corporate media.
There are 100 indie media or IMC websites worldwide providing grassroots reports of struggles, campaigns and protests.
There are so many people here who are saying no to the government today, and this is democracy in action.
Everybody's here. Everybody in the country seems to be here. They're just coming from all over the place. The banners are showing all the tiny, tiny little pockets of the country. Everybody has come down here.
The project started 3 years ago, covering the massive Seattle protests, which shut down the World Trade Organization's summit.
Uncensored and unsponsored, IMC sites can be updated anywhere, anytime, by anyone.
The open-to-all nature of these sites means that you can publish your own reports about your own issues and at the same time connect to a global network of grassroots news. What you are about to hear are some highlights from these global websites and from our very own UK IMC Wire. For more information or to get the news direct from the streets, check out www.indymedia.org.uk.
Hello and welcome to the show. You're listening to Indie Media Radio London on Resonance FM 104.4. It's Wednesday the 24th of March. Now, as you may have heard, last weekend was the first anniversary of the start of the attacks against Iraq and the immediate massive worldwide anti-war protests that accompanied it. While smaller than previous demonstrations, last weekend saw millions around the world demonstrating, both on March the 19th, the actual anniversary, as well as Saturday the 20th, the anniversary of worldwide protests. In Iraq, a demonstration took place in Baghdad, in tandem with the protests around the world. The protest was also a powerful show of unity between Sunni and Shia Muslims. The marches started in different places, and the two groups met just as the Shias came over a bridge, and emotions were high as they merged into one. Then together they walked to a public square where speakers denounced the occupation and called for unity between all Iraqis. Although, as said, turnouts across the world were not as great as the February 2003 massive rallies, protests did occur in around 300 cities across the world. In the UK, there were protests in many cities, including Glasgow and Bristol. In London, the National Stop the War Coalition demonstration saw tens of thousands of people filling the streets throughout the afternoon in a march from Hyde Park to Trafalgar Square. While the police said 25,000 people attended, the Stop the War Coalition put the figures at 100,000. Many commentators, as usual, put the figure at somewhere in between. It certainly took well over an hour and a half for the march to leave the park and just over 2 hours to snake its way to Trafalgar Square. Earlier in the day, two Greenpeace activists had climbed up Big Ben to unfurl a banner reading Time for Truth, sparking yet another debate about anti-terrorist security.
On the demonstration, there were two samba bands, several bicycle sound systems, the debut of some colourful radical cheerleaders, free food, yoga, meditation, a free microphone contraption, Green Party stalls, a kids area, an anti-authoritarian bloc, the New Respect Coalition Party, and a lot of banners in the crowd. 2,000 black balloons were released in memory of those killed in the Iraq conflict, as well as Madrid. Lots of Spanish people were out on the streets, and there were also very few police. Dark clouds, a little rain, oh, and Chris Eubank, in a huge anti-war truck rig, ringed by police shaking hands with people from the cab. One person was arrested by police near to Chris Eubank's truck on the flimsiest of pretexts for videoing police while standing on the other side of the white ribbon used to split the road in half and mark the march route. His footage was seized by the police. The demonstration also saw the first outing of Code Pink in the UK. Code Pink is a women's organisation that last year gathered 10,000 women to surround the White House and protest against the war. Speakers at Trafalgar Square included George Galloway, Jeremy Corbyn and Lindsay German, and Dr. Aziz Tamimi from the Muslim Association of Great Britain, as well as Louise Christian, a lawyer representing one of the Britons recently released from Guantanamo Bay. In Dublin, over 6,000 people marched despite the rain, and speaker after speaker called for massive protests for when G.W. Bush visits Ireland on June the 25th and 26th. Every month, 10,000 US troops travel through Shannon Airport in the west of Ireland. Shannon is also the likely entry point for Bush, who is seeking favour with the 40 million Irish Americans in what could prove a close election, if you could call it that. Around the world, there are events from small vigils to massive marches. In East Timor, for example, 50 people demonstrated, while in Rome, reports speak of between 1 to 2 million people. Spain saw several demonstrations of over 100,000, as well as huge protests in America and Japan. In Manila, over 1,000 people protesting were attacked by police using fire hoses. For more on the protests, check out the Global Indie Media portal, that sounds very space age, at www.indiemedia.org.
The day before the 20th, on Friday, Yorkshire CND held a mass non-violent blockade at the key US military base Menwith Hill, near Yorkshire. Over 200 people blocked three gates completely, causing tailbacks for hours and massively disrupting the shift changeover. Menwith Hill felt compelled to issue a statement, which is amazing since they never ever issue statements or speak to anyone. The action, Block the Base, started in freezing, driving rain at 5 a.m. in the morning, with protesters who had stayed in Leeds overnight blockading. Many protesters were met by police waiting for them when they arrived, yet they managed to block all four gates of the base, many locking themselves together. The shift change between 5:30 and 7 a.m. essentially turned into a traffic jam. The police had moved pretty fast to try and clear the first two gates, and reports were that they were pretty brutal with dangerous use of cutting equipment to remove people from lock-ons. Yorkshire CND said that despite advance liaison with the police in fact ignored most of the agreements and behaved disgracefully, they say. There were definite cases of extreme excessive force and violence. CND are now saying they want as much information and as many pictures as possible from anyone who was there to collect evidence. The police also arrested a man for driving a van with a public address system in it and kept the keys of the van, so the campaigners lost their PA system and megaphones. By 7 a.m, most of the protesters at Gate 1 had been removed and were waiting, wet and cold, to be arrested. In all, 30 people were arrested, but the other gates were still blocked. The event, of course, was part of the international weekend of actions to mark the anniversary of the attacks on Iraq, but it was also aimed at highlighting Menwith Hill's key role in so many aspects of current US foreign policy. The base is the largest military spy base in the world, run by the US National Security Agency. It's also a key US warfighting base, winning an award for its role in the Gulf War, and a major Star Wars base. Indeed, it is one of the US's most strategically important military bases.
Just can't stop it, the way I drop it.
yesterday morning, around 70 police bailiffs and specialist climbers and tunnellers began evicting the tree camps at Blackwood in South Wales, where locals have been campaigning against a new road for over a decade. Around 10 people were arrested as they resisted in the trees, on walkways, in nets and in a tunnel, some after breaching cordons. Crowds of supportive locals looked on from behind the police cordon, as did local TV and media. At Camp Kerry, one brave activist still remained at the end of the day and was able to climb down without being arrested. Blackwood resident Barbara Davis said, "It's very sad. We've lived with these trees for all this time. It's a place where families go for walks on Sundays." Another resident, Sean Morgan, added, "It's total disrespect for our lives. You do not have to be an eco-warrior to appreciate that." The mother of Manic Street Preachers guitarist Nicky Wire has been part of the campaign to save the trees. Irene Jones said, "I can't put into words how upset I feel today. Hundreds and hundreds of years of history will soon be gone. The protesters have been wonderful. They've been so brave with all this going on around them, but I don't feel that I've done enough." Despite an appeal against the eviction order still pending in the courts, Gwent Under-Sheriff David Bowen said, "All I'm here to do is to enforce the court order. I believe that the appeal process has been fully exhausted and we are not aware of any new appeal." Most of the trees were destroyed yesterday, but some remain, both at Camp Kerry and at a third camp. Local campaigners say they will continue resisting today and beyond. For more information, check out Indie Media UK or Indie Media Bristol at bristol.indiemedia.org.
And in related news, as we reported some weeks ago, Tony Wrench of a community in Wales has been ordered to pull his turf-roofed roundhouse down. Sorry, that's not in Wales at all. I've got that mistaken. In Pembrokeshire National Park, he's been ordered to pull his turf-roofed roundhouse down by the Park Planning Authority. After paying £1,000 of fines, he is planning to take down his roundhouse in Easter. And we reported some weeks ago that there was going to be a camp there to take it down. Well, there's been some new developments. His eco house, which people say is a national treasure and a historic relic, indeed an inspiration to thousands of other people in the eco building industry. At the same time as this has been happening, the gobsmackingly blatant display of double standards by the Parks Planning Committee, which has given Alfred McAlpine permission to erect 350 holiday chalets in the park, and they're not even going to be built here, they're going to be imported from Estonia, has enraged many campaigners. And now the campaign group The Land Is Ours and others are organising a land occupation protest and a low-impact dwelling convention over the Easter weekend in the park. That's the 8th to the 13th of April. They say the protest and the dwelling convention will include construction of another turf-roofed roundhouse in the national park and the first ideal low-impact home exhibition, as well as several protests and workshops and practical trainings in renewable living and eco-construction. And for more on this, see www.tlio.org.uk, and that stands for The Land Is Ours.
One.
In South Africa recently, police opened fire with stun grenades on members of the Gauteng Anti-Privatisation Forum, the APF, who were protesting against water privatisation and the installation of prepaid water meters. 52 APF members were arrested, including 6 children, on charges of violating something called the Gatherings Act. Supporters were asked by police to disperse within 3 minutes, one by one, and as they did, the police began to shoot at them. Several were wounded. The Gatherings Act is a piece of law dating back from the apartheid era, which gives police broad powers to ban or otherwise interfere with legitimate protest action. Last Thursday, mere days before the action was due to take place, the Johannesburg Metropolitan Police denied permission for the Coalition Against Water Privatisation on the grounds that the protest would be violent. Well, no previous APF protest had been violent. They also said that the protest would disrupt traffic and would constitute a threat to law and order. The coalition, with the assistance of one of its member organisations, the Freedom of Expression Institute, immediately drew up an appeal paper to get the ban overturned in court. However, in an unprecedented move, the sheriff of the court refused to carry out the expressed mandate of that office to serve such papers. When the coalition's lawyers finally managed to secure a court hearing late on Friday, the magistrate dismissed the appeal on a technicality. The day of the protests saw the opening of the new constitutional court building. Yet 10 years after the end of apartheid, many poor people in South Africa are still denied their constitutional rights to water and other basic services. And this is why the APF decided that the march had to go ahead, apartheid-era banning orders or not.
The struggle against water privatisation in South Africa Township came in the name of development to bring free and clean water by means of prepaid meters. The decision to install the meters had already been made. They never consulted the residents as to the type of water services the community would prefer. Johannesburg Water, a private company that is part of the French transnational corporation Suez Lyonnais, was given a contract to manage Johannesburg's water services. In 2001, they came to install meters in Orange Farm. Now they face a crisis around water delivery, notably the installation of prepaid meters. A minimal infrastructure for water services was already in place. People were receiving water to meet their basic needs, although in certain areas water was only provided in the form of communal standpipes. The constitutional right to water was thus being met. The residents of Orange Farm resisted the approach of Johannesburg Water and made local government aware that the community was not in agreement with prepaid meters. The community organised